Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern at 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. New text and voicemail line at 331-979-1369. You've been great about leaving your text messages, your questions, and as well as your voicemails there. So if you want to do that leading up to draft night and maybe hear your voicemail on the show tomorrow or Friday's reaction as well as who the Bulls are going to take on Thursday night, we'd love to hear from you. So 331-979-1369. Matt, how you doing? We've got some rumors going on that might be pushing an apology on Friday again, once again, from you.
Cool, man. Cool story, bro. Well, let's talk when it happens. Oh, my God. I'm so sick of Bulls fans. No offense, Bulls Nation. I still love you. Just kidding. Somebody else came at me on Twitter yesterday. Like, oh, here's a report. The Bulls are looking to trade up to the third or fourth. What do you think about that, Peck? Nothing. Short answer, I think absolutely nothing about that. It's the week of the draft. Of course, there are rumors flying all over the place about all sorts of teams trying to move up or move down or who teams are taking. I still don't believe the Bulls are going to make a move with that seventh pick and moving up tomorrow. I don't. If I'm wrong, I will come on the show on Friday and say that I was wrong. But if I'm right, oh boy, will I come on this show Friday and tell everybody I told you so.
All right, so let's talk real quick about this, because what did I tell you on yesterday's episode that I said would be the one scenario that I would probably freak out about? And that's the that's trading up for the Grizzlies pick at number four, maybe giving away Portis in that deal, only to turn around and draft Michael Porter Jr. If the Bulls are going to take Michael Porter Jr., I'd rather than take that risk at seven. There's no way in any universe that I want them to trade up and try and take him. If the report is true that Mo Bamba might be in play and that's actually the guy that they really like, then I'm all for it. But I guess in a scenario, I know this makes you roll your eyes a million times, but if the Bulls were to trade up to four, obviously the Parsons contract is probably going to be in play. What else do the Bulls have to send back with number seven in order to sweeten this deal and make this happen?
I mean, they might have to send 22 in addition to seven. They might have to send Bobby Portis. They might have to send, you know, Denzel, although I'm not sure that Denzel is much of a pot sweetener in any trade right now for teams across the league. No offense to him. Really, Bobby makes the most sense. And even Bobby still only has one more year of team control on his contract right now. So, to me, the most likely would be at least swapping seven, throwing in 22, maybe throwing in Bobby Portis, and if not, a team looking for an additional pick, a future pick. That being said, I share your feeling on if the Bulls are doing this and looking to trade up and are actually actively making calls to try to make this happen to get Michael Porter Jr., I think that's a horrible mistake. I don't even think the Bulls should be trying to trade up a few spots to take Mo Bamba. As much as I've said that I like Mo Bamba, and I would love it if he fell to the Bulls at seven, I don't think he's worth giving up swapping picks at 7, also throwing in 22, and maybe the Bulls giving up a player to just move up a few spots to take him. The two guys that I would move up for if I'm the Bulls are Doncic and Jaren Jackson Jr. And that's going to be the interesting way to see how this plays out, especially with Atlanta at 3 and Memphis at 4. Because most of what we've been hearing, and it seems like this is pretty concrete now over the last 72 hours, is that the Suns are absolutely 100% going to take DeAndre Ayton. And the Kings are either going to take Marvin Bagley III or might surprise people and take Michael Porter Jr. There's still a small faction of people that think that Vlade Divac and his crew are just doing all sorts of weird smoke screens and actually are planning on taking Luka Doncic with that second pick. But I think what I've heard from people is true, and that they're going to take either Bagley or Porter at this point. Which means when you get to picks 3 and 4, Doncic and Jaren Jackson Jr. are both going to be on the board. That is why I say if the Bulls are going to move up to either 3 or 4, do it for one of those two guys, because they likely will be there at 3 and 4. It's just a matter of what it will cost. If it costs the Bulls taking on Parsons' contract and also sending away their 22 pick to get either of those two guys, I say absolutely.
I'm a little bit indifferent in the fact that I don't want the Bulls to trade away number 22 just to move up a couple spots, especially if Jaren Jackson Jr. is off the board, Luka Doncic is off the board. Yeah, Mohamed Bam is good. If it's just a clean number 7 and number 22 for number 4, and you don't have to give up Bobby Portis or Denzel Valentine, or maybe you can some way swap one of those two for that pick, I'm cool with moving up from Mo Bamba. But I think you're right, and the telling factor is going to be who Atlanta and who Memphis take. There was reports that Mo Bamba didn't send his medicals to the Grizzlies and basically told them, hey, you know what? I have no interest in coming to your city. I'd prefer you not to draft me. Same thing with Jaren Jackson Jr.'s camp, is they didn't send medicals over there, refused to work out, and pretty much said, I don't want to go there. Do not draft me. So those are going to be the two interesting guys. If Marvin Bagley and Luka Doncic are off the board at 2 and 3, then you look at Atlanta, and if they decide to take somebody besides Jaren Jackson Jr., I think Memphis is going to really be screwed at that fourth pick and have to decide with whether or not to take a risk on a guy that said he's not interested in playing in their city, or also maybe take a reach in a guy like Michael Porter Jr., or look to trade down. So I think there's going to be a little bit more pressure when we figure out maybe exactly what Atlanta does. I feel like I'm pretty confident in saying that I don't think Sacramento is going to take Michael Porter Jr. at 2. I'm pretty sure they're going to take Marvin Bagley. So in that case, I think you can kind of play play both sides, of from Atlanta's side and from Memphis's side. And obviously it's going to probably take a little bit more to sweeten the deal as far as trading with Atlanta. The Grizzlies, I think you can get into a situation of talking into them about Jaren Jackson Jr. and Mo Bamba if they're there at 4 and saying neither of those guys want to be on your team. So how about you move back and maybe take Michael Porter Jr. at 7, still get the guy that you take there at 4, and you can take our 22nd pick, or you can take Denzel Valentine and Bobby Portis on top of that. And
I think maybe if Memphis is not keen on where they are sitting at 4, with the options on the board, and you're talking about trading down, I think Wendell Carter Jr. is a guy that they would probably like to add to their squad. I mean, Marc Gasol is getting old, and Wendell Carter Jr. probably will be there at 7. I think Orlando is the only outside shot of Wendell Carter Jr. going off the board before 7. And that's certainly another possibility. That was another report that is worth mentioning yesterday, and I think this came from Woj, is that the Hawks have kind of zeroed in on Doncic being their guy, assuming that Ayton is going at 1 and Bagley's going at 2. Seems like he has, I think Woj used the phrase, come to the forefront of their conversations in Atlanta. And the other, you know, possibilities they're thinking about there are Jaren Jackson Jr. and Mo Bamba. If that's the case and Atlanta takes Doncic 4 and Memphis is sitting there and the board is Jaren Jackson Jr., Mo Bamba, Michael Porter Jr., and they're not super thrilled about any of those ideas, you know, maybe we actually do see a team leap up into the top 4. I still would be very shocked if that team were the Bulls. And again, to me, it's only worth it if you're getting one of those two guys, Doncic or Jackson Jr. And if Atlanta really is that high on Doncic, it sounds like Memphis is the one and only chance the Bulls have to nab one of those guys. And I mean, for the Bulls, maybe it's Jaren Jackson Jr. or maybe it's Mo Bamba. Maybe they do value Bamba that highly that they would make a trade with Memphis to take Bamba at four. To me, I don't think it's worth it, but the Bulls might.
I think the one thing, too, is another factor is the only way Atlanta for the Bulls, as far as trades talks go, that is in play is if the Kings take Luka Doncic there at two, right? Because then they can shift their focus to, we've heard rumors about maybe Atlanta liking Trae Young, and if they figure they don't want to take any of these big men, maybe they can swap at seven, still get Trae Young at number seven, still get a guard with potential of a really high ceiling. It's obviously not Luka Doncic, but still you're getting your second best option there. And I just go back to the only four teams that Trae Young worked out for: the Hawks, the Orlando Magic, the Chicago Bulls, and the New York Knicks. So those four teams, the only ones to really have a private workout with him. I hone in on that. So I think if you see more rumors about Luka Doncic, maybe in the next 24 hours linked to the Kings, which I feel like it's more slotting to Marvin Bagley, that's the only way I see Atlanta being in play. But yeah, you talk to the Grizzlies too, and I wouldn't put pressure. I would put pressure on the Grizzlies saying, you know, that Chandler Parsons contract is one of the worst in the league. I think Luol Deng's contract is probably a little bit worse, but that's one of the worst contracts in the league. So to give up an additional first round pick just to move up three spots, I would be trying as much as I could to negotiate with those guys and tell them, like, look, this contract is terrible. And if you guys are trying to have any flexibility at all, this is the deal that you need to make. And also, too, if it ends up being Jaren Jackson Jr., Mo Bamba, Wendell Carter Jr. at four for them to select, or Michael Porter Jr. even for that fact, you could even pitch the idea that two of the four of those guys don't want to play in your city, and the other two guys could potentially be available at number seven.
I mean, people put too much weight on the which players have shared medicals with which teams and where do they not want to play versus where they do want to play. It's not up to the players. I mean, let's be real. If a team likes a guy, they're going to draft him. There is, I guess, some slightly more elevated risk of if the player hasn't chosen to share his medicals with you, there is some risk of them hiding something that team doesn't know if that team was not granted permission to see that information. But even still, to me, it's silly to talk about that as a real, like, weight factor. Because if a team likes a player, they're going to draft that player, regardless of what that player might be trying to do. And obviously we've talked a lot about that with Michael Porter Jr. specifically and all the weird ways that he's handled the approach to the draft. And the fact that a lot of people feel like he's trying to sort of finagle his way into being taken by the Bulls at seven. And I'm sorry, but if the Kings actually really do like him, or any other team above the Bulls at seven really do like Porter Jr. and think he's worth the risk, whether or not he is, you know, stoked about playing for them, they're going to take him. I think it's ridiculous to talk about where the player wants to be drafted to as a real factor. I'm sorry, but it's not up to them.
I wouldn't play it as a major factor, but I would definitely consider it as far as drafting a bunch of these guys. Because think about it, you're going to be taking a top five pick on a guy, and then you have to rely on your organization, your fans, and everybody around you in the next 4 or 5 years to pitch to this guy if he's going to end up being a superstar. Hey, you're going to want to stay here, because in 4 or 5 years, just when maybe some of these prospects are turning the corner and becoming, you know, in their primes, you want that guy to stay around. You don't want them to walk after their rookie contract. So I think that's something to consider as well. I don't think it's a big factor, but like you said, if a team feels strongly about a player, they're going to take him there and then say, okay, we got 4 or 5 years to convince this guy otherwise that we actually are committed to winning and this is a cool place to play. So I feel like teams have the ability to sell other players on their teams if they don't feel like that they want to go to certain spots. I don't think it's a major concern, but I definitely think it should be thrown into the conversation, just as you think character of players and whether or not they're divas or not should be also a factor in whether or not you should draft a guy.
I mean,
you're comparing
apples and oranges. That is how a front office evaluates a player who they are interested in drafting. You're talking about a player wanting to play, or more specifically, not wanting to play for a specific organization, and that has no bearing on whether or not that team takes that player. I don't think. I mean, like, obviously, other outside of the Bulls, which are a major market team, and DeAndre Ayton being happy going to Phoenix because he's an Arizona guy, it's like, who wants to play for any of these scrub basement, you know, bottom dweller teams that are top picking in the top six right now? Orlando has been a joke of a franchise and has been lost since the post-Dwight years. Nobody, like Mark Cuban, has driven the Dallas Mavericks into the ground in the exit of Dirk Nowitzki's prime. Nobody wants to play for the Atlanta Hawks. Nobody wants to play for any of these teams, but it doesn't matter. Those teams have the picks. They're going to make the picks, and I don't think it matters at all if a player says, well, I'm not going to share my medicals with you because I don't really want to play for you. Tough cookies. We're picking you anyway. That's not the same thing as saying a front office will weigh character into their decision. It's the front office's call. It's not the player's call.
No, I know. I understand that it's not the same thing. I think they hold the same weight in terms of what you're evaluating a guy, though. If a guy says he doesn't want to come here, and comparing that to the weight that holds of a guy's character, and that's just my personal opinion. I don't think teams hold the weight of a guy's personality and their maturity, especially 19 years old, talking about Michael Porter Jr.
The team whose podcast we're hosting sure does. The Bulls front office sure does weigh that pretty significantly.
Yeah, well, the Bulls don't run it like a normal NBA organization like we're supposed to run it. So in that factor, too, like that's at least how I feel. If I was the GM, I wouldn't hold the weight of a player's maturity or immaturity, because I would have confidence in my coaching staff and my players and everybody in this organization to build with maturity. Like 19, 20 years old, I get that. I think it holds the same weight as saying that a player doesn't want to go to a certain spot, withholding medicals, and then having to turn around and try to convince them in 3, 4, 5 years that this is a place you're going to want to stay should they turn into a superstar. But that's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, but that's a problem for 3 or 4 or 5 years down the road. That's not a draft night problem. On draft night, you take the best player that's on the board that will help your team
sure,
win games.
And I get that, and I understand that too. But if you're looking at a team that's trying to rebuild and where your timeline is 3, 4, 5 years down the road, obviously that's got to be something small to consider.
I don't see it. I mean, I really don't.
We can agree to disagree on this one, and I think there's probably a split down the middle.
Wouldn't be the first time.
there's probably a split down the middle, too, of Bulls fans who feel this way as well. And like I told you, I have indifferences about how I feel teams evaluate divas and whether or not that's really a huge factor for a team to draft a guy. So we'll split hairs on this one. But we got to take a short break here. But when we come back, we're going to take all of your voicemails, your questions in our draft segment of Mailbag. This is the final draft segment and final Mailbag leading up to the NBA draft. So we'll answer all those questions. And we've got a couple voicemails to get to as well. Hit us up at 331-979-1369. If you want to join into the conversation, wherever you're listening to the show, whenever you're listening to the show, stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds. All right, back here on Locked On Bulls, going through your questions. Once again, you can hit us up on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, or at Locked On Bulls with all of your questions. If you want to interact with the show or be a part of the conversation, you can hit us up at 331-979-1369 on our text and voicemail line. Both of those will respond right away as well. We've been getting a flood of questions, not only from this trading news, but also from the draft leading up to Thursday night. So, Matt, let's dive into a bunch of these questions.
Here we go. This one comes to us from the 269 area code. Recently, I read that both Mo Bamba and Jaren Jackson Jr. told the Grizzlies they don't want to go there, didn't give them their medical info. Do you think this means Memphis could think about trading the 4th pick and Parsons contract to the Bulls for number 7 and perhaps 22 and other assets? So he says, I would love this deal and love Jaren Jackson. I see tremendous upside with both. So this is something we were talking a little bit about before the break. And to me, and we were also talking about the whole like factor of whether or not players share medicals with certain teams. We know how I feel about that. We know how you feel about that. To me, this is kind of like the be-all, end-all of the Bulls actually managing to make a trade on draft night. I still don't think it's going to happen. I don't think it's likely. But moving up to four to take one of those guys, Jaren Jackson Jr. or Bamba, assuming that Ayton, Bagley, and Doncic go 1-2-3, that's the only realistic way that the Bulls can move up and get the guy that they really, really want.
I don't have any disagreement on that one. I would be fine with Mo Bamba or Jaren Jackson Jr. should the Bulls trade up with Memphis at number four. And if you've got to... if you've got to throw Bobby Portis in the deal, or you got to throw Denzel Valentine in the deal, or the number 22 pick, I don't think you give two of the three of those up in a deal in addition to number seven, but that's just me. I feel like one of those guys should get you, should get the deal done, especially if the way you had just repeated the first three draft order, I feel like if it goes that way, then I don't even think you need to throw in two out of those three pieces in Valentine, Portis, or the number 22 pick, but we'll see. And I'm with you. I think if the Bulls are going to move up, Jaren Jackson Jr. or Mohamed Bamba, I would be thrilled if either one of those were drafted on draft night by the Bulls. All right, this comes from the 702. For the love of everything holy, please, please tell me the Bulls are not trying to trade up to get Michael Porter Jr. I can understand Mo Bamba or Jaren Jackson Jr., but Michael Porter Jr., last time they traded up for a wing, different circumstance, type of players, was for Doug McDermott. Just think this will be another swing and miss by Gar Pax. That's from Mark in Dallas, Texas. Thanks for the question. Yeah, Doug McDermott was a little bit of a different situation. Obviously, you were trading up to get in the back part of the lottery. Then again, you did take two of your first round picks that turned it out to be Gary Harris and your Yusuf Nurkic. So I can see the comparison, but we're talking about trading up in the top four, and we've talked about how heavy the draft class is at the top five. At least that's how I feel. So I think it's a little bit different, but I'm definitely with you, and I don't want the Bulls anywhere near thinking about taking Michael Porter Jr. at number four and having to give away additional assets for that. If they're going to take him, I would rather them see them take that risk and stay at seven, and if he falls all the way there, then take him there.
Yeah. I mean, that you and I, we can agree on some things. And I think one of those things is that we don't want the Bulls to do anything remotely similar to trading up to take Michael Porter Jr. I think it's a terrible idea. So, Mark in Dallas, I am with you there. The McDermott comparison, I think it doesn't really apply in this situation. Because, you know, we're talking about moving up into the top five from seven, as opposed to giving up a couple of picks back and, you know, towards the back end of the draft to get McDermott. Different circumstances, but I still agree with Mark's main concern, which is that trading up for Porter is a bad idea. All right, let's move on to the next one. This one's interesting. This one comes from the 217 area code. How big is the gap between Bridges, and Knox at 7 and, say, Hutchison, Troy Brown at 22? I like those guys at 22 and don't see much additional value in taking one of the higher-ranked wings at 7. Thanks for texting in. Jordan, this one's interesting because we just did, on yesterday's show, a ranking of how we saw the Bulls picking and valuing picks at 7 and 22, and there were a lot of wings at both spots. Personally, I don't know if it's a huge gap between the Bridges and Knox and some of those other wings that we were talking about that the Bulls might be looking at 22, which is why I think you and I are in agreement with the idea that the Bulls should, if they can, get a big, because they are certainly heavily weighted towards the front top end of this draft class with that 7 pick. Or, you know, if they can't get Doncic and they, you know, can't get whoever else, get a big with 7 and then go with one of those wings at 22, because they might not necessarily be as highly ranked as the Bridges guys and as Kevin Knox coming into this draft. But who knows how they play out? I don't think the gap is that wide.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think you're more so talking about with Hutchison, and then you look at Mikal Bridges. Those are two similar players. One played at a big program. They both stayed 4 years, but their statistics are similar. I mean, I talked about how I like Chandler Hutchison's defensive rebounding, his ability to drive to the basket. Mikal Bridges is probably a better three-point shooter and a little bit better of a defender than Hutchison is, but the gap is probably not that far off between those two guys. Hutchison and Miles Bridges and Kevin Knox are a little bit different. Hutchison's a better defender than Miles Miles Bridges is. Miles Bridges is a better offensive player, played at a big time program, played 2 years only there. So you're getting the age difference in there. Same thing with Kevin Knox. I don't think he was really used that well at Kentucky. And to compare him to Chandler Hutchison, I think they're going to play two different positions in the NBA. So I'm with you, though. I don't think there's that much of a difference there. I don't see any superstar potential in Mikal Bridges, Miles Bridges, or Kevin Knox, like ultimate superstar in the next 3 or 4 years. Whereas I see more of a productive role player being a part of a rotation on a really good team. And same thing goes for Chandler Hutchison or Troy Brown at number 22. Either of those wings, I think the fall off in terms of top tier wings in this draft and then sort of the middling mediocre wings can be extended all the way through the early 20s as far as where some of these wings are going to go. So I don't think there's that big of a difference in it. Obviously, you'd probably be getting a better player right away in either of the Bridges or Knox. But if they do decide to take a big, I am all in on them taking Chandler Hutchison or another wing, sort of combo guard wing like Kevin Huerter.
Yeah, I would agree that I don't think there are any... Nobody sees any of the wings in this draft as superstar potential wings. I think a reason that Mikal Bridges has been on the Bulls' list and they're on their radar for so long is that he is a contribute right away guy, and he comes from a blue chip program, just like Miles Bridges, just like Kevin Knox, and those are the guys that the Bulls usually like to draft. I would say that I think that the way that most mock drafts are panning out and the fact that Knox and both Bridges are somewhere in the just right around 10 or the early teens, whereas some of the other guys, Hutchison, Kevin Huerter, Troy Brown, some of those other wings towards the back end, I think that is accurate as far as the top tier of wings in this draft and then the second tier. I think they don't have any of those mixed up right now as far as their NBA floors and their NBA ceilings. I think the way that they're broken down right now in those pairings of Bridges and Knox and Bridges and then the rest is accurate. But about the question of the gap, I don't think the gap is astronomically large.
Yeah, so I like that question. That's a good question. So if the Bulls do take a big at number 7, look for one of these wing players to be on the Bulls at number 22 if they decide not to trade up. So interesting. And I think Chandler Hutchison or Troy Brown or whoever they decide to take as far as a guard wing combo will have an impact relatively quickly on this Bulls team, especially if they're looking for a 4-year player. And like I said, I think fans are getting too caught up and bothered by the whole agent connection of Chandler Hutchison. I don't think you have to be that concerned about it. I watched the tape on Chandler Hutchison. You look at the stats. The guy can play. He won Mountain West Player of the Year last year. He was the best player on his team. Led that Boise State team in the most wins they've had in 5 years. So I look at that and take that into account as well. And you tell me small school, okay, I can list you off 10 different players that played at small, no-name basketball schools in college that turned out to be superstars. So that argument to me is really nonsense as well. So I don't think the fall off's that far either. Let's get to our voicemail here from Mike at 314. This one's about Cleveland.
Fellas, it's Mike again. I just saw a report that the Cleveland Cavaliers intend to take Michael Porter Jr. if he's available at their pick, whatever it is, 8th or something like that. And then I read another report that the Kings prefer Marvin Bagley, however many of over Luka Doncic, so at least we know who those guys are going to take. I don't know why. I mean, do these teams pay the reporters to write this shit? Because if I'm the Cavaliers and I want Porter at 8 or whatever, obviously you're not going to tell anybody that. Nobody is that stupid. Not even Paxson and Matt's buddy Gar are that stupid. So what I think is really happening is Cleveland doesn't want Michael Porter Jr., but Cleveland knows that if somebody is stupid enough to want him and to either trade in front of Cleveland, or if one of these teams says, oh, wow, you know, well, Cleveland values Porter Jr., maybe we'll take him first. I think Cleveland is trying to influence a team, con a team into either moving ahead of them to take Porter Jr. or just to add value to the Michael Porter Jr. sort of mystique so that he gets taken before Cleveland picks, because that means one more no-questions-asked health issue player falls to Cleveland at 8. Because there's no way if you want a player with the 8th pick, you tell anybody who that is. At least that's my 10 cents. So I think all the gamesmanship has begun. All the rumors have started flying, and I'd like to hear what you guys think about, you know, who these teams say they're taking, and if there's any gamesmanship being played on behalf of our beloved Los Chicago Bulls. That's it. Over and out. Look forward to hearing from you.
Thanks for calling in, Mike. Mike really wants me to be friends with Gar Foreman for some reason. I don't know why. I feel like this is the second call we've gotten from Mike where he's just so offended and astonished that front offices do things like try to trick each other and go through smoke screens. And his previous call was, I can't believe that sports journalists put crazy misleading or uninformed or straight up false headlines on their columns just to get clicks on those columns. I mean, my goodness, Mike, wake up, man. Like, yes, that happens. And yes, front offices going through smokescreen processes absolutely happens. With this specific example of Cleveland talking about their interest in Michael Porter Jr., it's certainly, like, I've seen a lot of mock drafts with Porter Jr. going to Cleveland because the Bulls pass on him and take the safe bet in Wendell Carter Jr., and the rest of the top seven shakes out the way that people are expecting it to, and Michael Porter Jr. is there at eight. And whether it's trying to draft a new budding star to convince LeBron to stay or the first piece of the post-LeBron era plan, Porter Jr. makes sense for Cleveland. He certainly could sell them tickets, especially in a scenario where LeBron is leaving and abandoning them. So as far as like what that effect has or on the teams ahead of Cleveland in the draft, I think the answer is the one that I've given pretty much from day one and how I always feel about the draft. Not much. Teams can try to smokescreen each other. And really, I mean, the one example that I can think of recently of a front office totally fleecing somebody because of putting certain various information and feelers out there that were misleading is Danny Ainge fleecing the Sixers last year. And the fact that the Boston Celtics traded down so that the Sixers got the guy that Colangelo wanted in Markelle Fultz, and we've just learned earlier this week that maybe not everybody in Philly wanted Fultz, to take the guy that they would have picked one anyway, and that's Jason Tatum. So, I mean, unless you're Danny Ainge, who was sort of in recent years, between that and then getting all of those picks from Brooklyn and that trade dating back to, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, whenever it was, nobody else is all that successful when it comes to the smoke screens. But yes, it absolutely happens.
Yeah, and there's people inside the organizations that are going to feed information to these reporters in exchange for maybe a story later. It happens all the time, and these reporters are willing to help out, and they're just going to report on anything that they do hear from a credible source, and whether or not they're speaking the truth to a lot of these reporters, probably not. And like, other teams might hit up these reporters too in other cities too and try to leak information to those people as well to throw them off. Like, it happens all the time. And another thing I think to keep into account too is what source you're getting your information from. Obviously, there's a lot of reputable sources out there, but there's radio stations and TV channels that are willing to take a chance on bringing a guy on to talk about quote-unquote rumors happened in the city here a couple days ago. Where they have no sources, they're a fake accounts going on some of these programs or podcasts. So I would say find your source too and look into the credibility of your source before freaking out about any of these guys who might be throwing smoke screens. It might not be even the journalists. Maybe they are getting credible information from credible sources, but those sources are just feeding them bad information, you know, for a purpose.
Yeah, I look right here in Chicago. In over the last 24 hours, for a perfect example, I tweeted about this morning. Over the last 24 hours, Vincent Goodwill, who is on the beat for NBC Sports Chicago, put out a column that said the Bulls are interested in trading up to 3 or maybe 4 and are eyeing Michael Porter Jr. In that same report, Vincent Goodwill said, I got this from outside sources, a.k.a. not within the Bulls organization, but outside sources. And then the Bulls front office refuted those reports saying that they were looking to trade up to 3 or 4 for Michael Porter Jr. So Vincent Goodwill reported something and then said, by the way, the Bulls denied this report from outside sources in the same report. Simultaneously, Casey Johnson of the Trib, friend of the pod, said, yeah, the Bulls are trying to at least inquire about trading up and they're eyeing Mo Bamba. So those are two guys who were at the Advocate Center on a daily basis talking to teams or talking to players and coaches and people within the organization, talking to people and sources outside the organization from other teams around the league, other executives, saying completely different things. So here's my advice to you. If you are on Twitter, turn on your alerts for Woj and Mark Stein, maybe Shams, you want to throw him in there too, and ignore everything else that you see and read and hear over the next 36 hours. Because mostly it's junk and it's people trying to draw eyes and it's smoke screens and that's all it is. Until you see something from a legitimate source. And I would add to those three guys who are national NBA reporters, the guys that you feel comfortable following on the Bulls beat specifically. I mentioned just a couple of them just now, Casey and Vincent. Outside of that, Bleacher Report, this and that, and this blog and that blog, and ignore it. It's noise. It's noise. And that's why every time somebody comes to me and says, "Hell, did you see this latest report from so-and-so on BuzzFeed, whatever? Oh, the Bulls are looking to trade." I don't care. It's nonsense. It's all nonsense and noise until it actually happens. And until it actually happens, I don't believe that it is happening. It's as simple as that.
All right, this question comes from the 815. What would you guys say to the Bulls drafting Wendell Carter Jr. at 7, then packaging 22 and either Portis or Valentine to the Hornets for number 11 and taking back either Marvin Williams or Michael Kidd-Gilchrist's contract, then drafting Knox at 11? Do you guys like it for the Bulls, and what do you think about for Charlotte as it goes for them? I like this idea. I like the idea of trading back into the late lottery because, like we've talked about before, the Bulls have worked out a ton of those guys that are projected to go there. We just talked about Miles Bridges, Mikal Bridges, Kevin Knox, Robert Williams, Lonnie Walker. You look at any of those guys that maybe will go in the back half of the lottery, and I wouldn't even disclude throwing Colin Sexton's name in there as well. You look at any of those guys, and if the Bulls feel confident that maybe one of those wings, like we had said, slips to number 11 through 14, I think it's a viable option, and you've got to make the calls, and you've got to see what other teams are willing to trade for. In order to move this scenario, you're moving down 11 picks and out of the lottery. How is that really advantageous for the Charlotte Hornets? Do you believe that the Charlotte Hornets are going to be players in free agency over the next 2 years? Do you worry about where Kemba Walker's going to go after his contract is up, or whether or not they're going to deal him? I think there's a lot of question marks for the Charlotte Hornets, and I don't know. I guess I wouldn't understand why they would trade out of the lottery with how bad. Maybe it's because of how bad they've been at drafting over the last, say, 5-7 years of trying to make this a rebuilding and competitive team. So you could look at that one factor, but I think it's a good move for the Bulls. I just don't know if it makes a whole lot of sense for the Charlotte Hornets and where they're at right now.
Yeah, it would be great. Move for the Bulls to make, because as we were saying for that previous question, there definitely is a line and a marker and a separator between the top tier wings that are like where Knox is, you know, going 10, 11, 12, something like that, and the guys down at 22 that might be available. It makes sense for the Bulls. Charlotte, however, I don't know how much they're desperately trying to get off of the money of the guys you're mentioning, Marvin Williams and Kidd Gilchrist. Marvin Williams is due $30 million over the next two seasons. Kidd Gilchrist is due $26 million over the next two seasons. So not exactly pretty money there, but we also just did see Charlotte complete a deal this morning, trading away Dwight Howard to the Brooklyn Nets and getting some relief there. So I don't know that necessarily the Charlotte Hornets are really keen on doing this. And I'm pretty sure, let's look at the date of this text. This came to us 2 days ago. So this question was posed before that Dwight Howard trade went down, so maybe that wipes it off the board. Hypothetically, I think something like that makes sense for the Bulls, where they're trying to package 22 and a player to move up and get a wing that they really like, one of the first few wings that goes off the board. This particular Charlotte situation, especially now with the Dwight Howard trade that went down this morning, I don't see as very likely.
Yeah, and what the Charlotte Hornets need is a backup point guard or another option once they decide either Kemba Walker's going to stay or he's good, they're going to trade him. I mean, they need to look to the future of that position too, and we brought up the name Colin Sexton could be an option there. Obviously, they swung and missed on Malik Monk. I'm not ready to give up on that guy either, but if I'm going to... If there's any situation in where Charlotte's trying to add flexibility in order to sign big contracts, I think they would be looking at the guard position, and the Bulls don't have any guards to offer, and I'm certainly not offering Chris Dunn to move up 11 spots into the back half of that lottery. So a good move for the Bulls, not so much for the Charlotte Hornets.
All right, this one comes from the 518, and it's kind of similar to our previous question. Suppose the Bulls go big with their first pick. Do you see them trading Lopez for a late first or early second rounder and maybe taking a flyer on someone like Trey Duvall for the backup point guard spot? Thanks for the text. Without trying to hurt the feelings of Robin Lopez, who over the past couple of years has honestly been like my favorite Bull, great personality, great teammate, great locker room guy, and just a hard worker on the court, I don't think he's worth that. I mean, we'll see. The Bulls might try to shop him going into the deadline, but I think the Bulls right now are very keen on, even if they do take Wendell Carter Jr., or if they get Mo Bamba, or if they get Jaren Jackson Jr., I think the Bulls front office and coaching staff is pretty set on having Robin Lopez as their starting center going into next season, at least going into training camp, and we'll see how it goes from there. And if they do take a big, when they feel like that big is ready to step into a starting role alongside Markkanen in the front court. But if the question is talking about draft night, moving Lopez to try to get back into the late end of the first round or the early second round, I don't think that's happening.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I don't think that's going to happen either. But at the same time, to your point about Robin Lopez and being here for next year, obviously he's only on one more year of his deal. And maybe there's more value for Robin Lopez at the trade deadline coming up this season. Maybe the Bulls can get more value for him there because he's an expiring contract, and maybe you can get something from a team that's trying to make that extra push or has an injury going into the playoffs. So that's certainly an option there. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility either that the Bulls want to keep Robin Lopez in this locker room should they take a big man at number 7 or they move up for a guy. There's been multiple reports about Mo Bamba. I heard on the radio yesterday from Fran Fraschilla, who's a really good scout and has seen a ton of Mo Bamba, said the immaturity is there as well with him, and he gets lazy at times. So maybe they're looking for Robin Lopez to sort of be that first year mentor for a guy to take him under the wing if you're not mentally as strong as a guy maybe like Wendell Carter Jr. is, who the maturity is there already. Maybe if you do take a guy that's got a little bit of immaturity in him, you keep Robin Lopez around for that. You allow him to start at the center position when the season starts. And hey, like, there, you can't sit here and tell me that the big man that the Bulls might draft at number 7 or number 4 might not get something from Robin Lopez, even if it is for 4 months of the season before they deal him, or if it's for an entire year. So I can definitely see why the Bulls would still keep Robin Lopez around and they wouldn't just deal him for maybe a second round pick or anything like that. And we also know what the Bulls think of second round picks, so there's that as well.
Not much is the short answer. They don't think much about them.
But that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can always text or leave us your voicemails at 331-979-1369. We do this segment every single Wednesday, and if we've got voicemails that we like, we'll play those throughout the week as well. So definitely leave us your voicemails, your interaction, anything you got for us leading up to draft night, or if you want to leave your reaction from draft night about who the Bulls take at 7, if they decide to move up or down, as well as who they take at number 22 and what you guys feel like. So we want to hear all of your reaction, Bulls fans, from draft night. So 331-979-1369. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls on Twitter. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. And subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow. Tomorrow is draft day. Get excited. We're definitely excited here, ready for it to be over. So if you want to interact with our show, you know where to do that. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.